Hello, we are the Brothers Geek, and this is our podcast. This is episode number 86, and we're the Brothers Geek. This is, say hi, Christopher Schmaltz.
Hi, Christopher Schmaltz. How are you?
There it is.
There it is. Say hi, Andrew Schmaltz.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Patrick Schmaltz. We're the Brothers Geek.
That's Patrick Schmaltz.
We talk about geeky things.
We are the Brothers Geekage.
Yeah. January 24th.
I'm off brand there. Sorry, I'm off
you
brand.
You are off brand. Get it together.
Sorry. I'm off brand.
So yeah, we're brothers. Let's talk about some geeky stuff. So a few days ago, they announced nominations for Oscars, and I got the list right here if you guys want to talk about some genre stuff that we saw.
Yeah.
That so, you know, let's take a look. Best Picture, let's you know, right out of the gate, Get Out, you know, was nominated, and The Shape of Water, which, you know, are kind of in our wheelhouse, and of course Dunkirk got nominated. So
Pat, were you the only one who saw Shape of Water?
I haven't seen it yet.
Nobody,
I haven't seen it.
You two
yet.
Haven't seen it. I don't think it's Best Picture.
I'm
you know
to see it, but, yeah.
So the list is as follows. Call Me by Your Name, I haven't seen that. Darkest Hour, I haven't seen that. Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, The Post, Words. I have probably seen about half of these, and of the ones, I would say Dunkirk would be my top choice, followed
in
by...
In terms of pure cinematic just
yeah.
experience? Yeah,
yeah.
I think I haven't seen all of them, but
mm-hmm.
I can't imagine anything coming close to...
Lady Bird was
felt.
Pretty good. I mean, I don't know if it's Best Picture, but it was a really good movie. So, yeah, my plan is to try to see all of these before
the
Oscars.
Honestly, that'll be my plan too.
March 4th.
I try to do that.
So you got about a month. You got over a month to watch all these.
I love that Get Out was nominated for Best Picture. I think.
Dude,
if
that's
anything,
so good.
That's
that
such
movie is so
incredible.
Good.
Yeah.
Scary and funny and smart and really
mm-hmm.
kind of messes you up in terms of, I mean, we're three white guys coming at that movie. And,
yeah.
And, you know, we're pretty kind of progressive thinking white guys, and it still kind of pushes.
It's a button pushing movie for sure. It's really good though. It's really smart.
It's still completely entertaining and works in
mm-hmm.
so many genre ways of horror that the... You know what Jordan Peele is trying to do with the movie
mm-hmm.
really lands because it's done inside kind of a horror trope. It's just great what he
right.
did and
right.
nominated for Best Picture. He got nominated for Best Director, and he got nominated for the screenplay also.
Original screenplay, yeah.
One of a handful of people in their first feature to get kind of the big top three creative awards. It's pretty
mm-hmm.
amazing. Props to Jordan Peele for that, for sure.
It's deserved. It is a
oh,
it's
completely
a expertly crafted film by someone who clearly loves the genre and
mm-hmm.
knows what he's doing, and it hits all the right notes, and also has commentary that
yes.
Is worthy of being in a movie.
So. Well, and also the lead actor, and I always butcher the pronunciation of his last name. His first name's Daniel, which is easy enough to pronounce, but his last name starts with a K, and he got nominated for Best Actor,
mm.
which is great. I mean,
he's really
movie,
good. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, he did a fantastic job.
I would like to call out one Rachel Morrison, the first female director of photography nominated for Mudbound. I haven't seen Mudbound, but she's the first woman.
Wow.
To be nominated for. Academy Awards. So
it's
I think, yeah,
that is amazing.
That happens in 2017.
Yeah,
I
come on.
Can't believe it.
9 years for the Oscars.
Well,
I mean, the other part of that is how many women actually get director of photography jobs?
Yeah, it's
you know?
Pretty
that,
it's pretty
that
slim.
Is indicative of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Exactly. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I think we can kind of who was it? God, I'm blanking on her name too. She got it's nominated for Best Picture. Lady Bird is nominated for Best Picture, and it's semi-autobiographical.
Oh, Greta Gerwig.
Yeah.
Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, Greta Gerwig. She directed it and she wrote it. So, I mean, there's finally kind of, and we could talk about that, finally kind of women are coming to the more of the forefront in terms of creative aspects. Mm-hmm. You know, it'd be nice to see, you know, much more women come to the forefront in terms of, you know, if we want to call them technical aspects, like the director of photography and things like that. That part of it is long overdue. Mm-hmm. In terms of women being represented,
it's just excellence. I mean, it has a lot to do with what's going on right now in the industry, I would say. But it's good that this is starting to, like, you know, I mean, 2018, and it's the first woman. Like, why is this taking so long? And
I completely agree. Mudbound is on Netflix. I know that for sure. Every time I log into Netflix,
oh, it's on Netflix. Really?
Yeah, it's available on Netflix. Yeah. I know some people that have watched it and they've really liked it.
Is it a Netflix like original?
I don't think it's a Netflix original. Mm. I think it did.
I looked it up yesterday, but
really, it's original
because it was on Netflix when it came out. I mean, it was day one.
Oh wow.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Blade Runner 2049 was Roger Deakins for his 14th nomination for an Academy Award. He still hasn't won. I'm a little bit torn because, you know, I love Roger Deakins.
He's nominated for Best Cinematographer.
Best Cinematographer, yeah.
Yeah.
And that movie is beautiful. Out of the ones that I've seen, you know, I would say it should go to that because Blade Runner is amazing.
Blade Runner.
That just came out on DVD too, so I need to rewatch that.
To rewatch that for sure.
Yeah, Blade Runner 2049.
Once. That's one of my big regrets of 2017 is I didn't see Blade Runner in the theater multiple times.
Yeah,
I saw that in IMAX.
Yeah,
it's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah, I saw it in IMAX also.
Let's talk about something that's right in our wheelhouse. Mm. Something that was on all three of our kind of like favorite movie lists of 2017. Christopher, in particular, named it, I think, is his favorite movie of 2017, Logan, got nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay.
Yeah.
That's huge for a genre superhero film.
So awesome.
Well, it was so different than other superhero movies. Like, you know, I think of like Dark Knight, you know, how that got nominated for a bunch of stuff too, and it's not surprising because it was such an amazing movie that...
Well, who remembers the controversy with Dark Knight and the fact that it was the highest grossing movie that year, it was critically acclaimed, Heath Ledger got nominated for Best Supporting Actor, but it didn't get nominated, and I think Nolan actually got nominated, no, he didn't get nominated, because this year is his actual first nomination for Best Director.
Oh my god, that's his first.
I think it's because he makes quote unquote genre films. I mean, Interstellar.
How does he not get nominated for Inception?
It completely.
I mean, come
on. Yeah, the Inception was amazing.
Yeah, and it's not even his best movie.
No.
Dark Knight not getting nominated, and it kind of like being. Like the close, because there was only five nominations until 2008, and then Dark Knight didn't get nominated for Best Picture, and everybody's like, this was one of the best movies of the year, and to not even get a nomination because it, so they expanded the field so there could be more nominations. So it allows for kind of the more opportunity for more quote unquote genre movies.
Yeah.
To get into that kind of that top eight or top 10 films of the year, according to the Academy.
Right.
And we're seeing, you know, kind of a younger, more hip Academy, I think.
Well,
the membership.
And I saw, I saw an article on Polygon about Wonder Woman not being nominated. And you know, I don't think it should have been. I mean, it was very good, but it was just, I mean, it wasn't like a good movie. It wasn't like a great movie.
I haven't seen the criticism about what categories it should have been nominated in. I can't think of any one. I mean, I really like that movie. It's a really good movie.
Special effects or costumes even.
Yeah, but the special effects were
right.
Were good.
I mean, they're good for a superhero movie.
Yeah, middling.
I mean, they're great for a superhero movie.
Not. What is nominated for like special effects?
Let me visual look effects. At I got it right here. Let me look at it.
Blade Runner, which looked amazing.
Last Jedi.
Amazing.
Guardians of the Galaxy. Kong Skull Island, which I think totally...
Dude, I loved Kong Skull
Island. That movie was great. And
it was really
amazing.
Yeah.
And you totally buy into Kong being right there.
Oh, yeah, you do.
War of the Planet of the Apes, which I didn't see, but is supposed to be very good.
Yeah, I didn't see that either. I haven't seen any of the Planet of the Apes movies.
None of them? All the new ones with the...
Yeah, no, I don't know why. It's just
Dude, I like the first two.
I've seen the first one, but I haven't seen the others.
Dawn? It's like Dawn and...
Dawn, Rise, and then War.
Rise is really good. I need to watch War, because it got great reviews.
All gotten great reviews.
Yeah.
And Andy Serkis is like universally kind of praised
for
his portrayal of Caesar, you know, the main character.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just haven't seen them. I don't know why. They just kind of dropped off my radar. But getting back to Wonder Woman, I think kind of, yeah, it's firmly a superhero movie. And we were all extremely happy with how good Gal Gadot was and the quality of the film and kind of the message of the film, and it kind of fit in nicely to this finally kind of acknowledgement of the fact that, you know what, women filmmakers can pull off an action film and a woman superhero can lead a superhero movie, and it doesn't have to be like a sex symbol movie, anything like that. Yeah, I think that it kind of like fit into it was the right movie at the right time in a lot of ways, but does it rise to the level of art that the Best Picture nomination hopefully?
I think it's an interesting question, because I think on the one hand it's good to debate it
completely
and discuss, because on the one hand you want to reward the effort and all those things that you were talking about, women involved, movie led by a woman, you know, all of that kind of thing. But on the other hand, it's a sign of progress that we're evaluating this not just because it's a participation award, you know, rewarding it simply because it has all of those, it ticks all of those boxes for progress. And on the other hand, it's progress that we're just evaluating the film based upon the film.
Yeah.
And I, you know, we talked about that. We all love that movie, and it's a great superhero movie. And I couldn't be happier about it being about Wonder Woman and led by women and all of that. I love all of that.
Exactly.
At the same time, evaluating it for what it is, I don't think it makes the list.
I mean, is it a better movie than Dunkirk? No.
No.
Is it a better movie than Get Out? No. Is it? And I've seen The Post, and The Post is led by a woman. Meryl Streep plays the publisher of.
Is she nominated again? Of course she is.
I think it's a better movie than The Post.
You think so? Okay.
I like The Post, but I think.
Yeah.
But that's a nomination based upon who's involved, and it's the prestige kind of film, right?
It is. You're right.
So, the Academy Awards are dumb and a joke anyway. So
I agree.
I won't even.
Honestly, I feel like they've come under fire in the past, like, 3 years, because, you know, what year was the Oscars so white, like, controversy?
That was, like, 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
It was 2 years ago.
Right.
Was it two? Just two.
Oh, my God. Think about that. And then, you know, the whole...
That's what prompted all the changes that led to last year...
Moonlight winning Best Picture.
So it
you know,
was
the
2 years
whole snafu.
Ago that it was Oscars so white.
Well, what was the... Like I saw some statistic a few years ago about the membership in the Academy was like overwhelmingly white and overwhelmingly male and overwhelmingly men, and like they were over 55.
Right.
Like 60% or 60 or 65% of the people who were in the Academy were male, white, and over 65 or something.
Yeah, it was definitely 2015, because I'm looking at the Best Picture, Birdman, American Sniper, Boyhood, Grand Budapest Hotel, Imitation Game, The Theory of Everything, Whiplash, and Selma. All the best actors, all white dudes.
Yeah.
And the actress, all white women.
Yeah. Jeez.
And actors in a supporting role, all white.
Yep.
Man. Actress in a supporting role, all white.
Okay.
Actress so white. Yeah, for sure.
And now it's like, you know, people were talking about the Golden Globes, and they were talking about how, you know, there's no female directors. You know, Greta Gerwig wasn't nominated, but she's nominated for Oscars. You know, and this is the first woman cinematographer, Rachel Morrison, and it's
just so 2016 too, though, because I'm looking at 2016, and it's the same deal. It's a very, very white page.
Yeah.
Oh man.
The top two categories, Timothy Calumet for Call Me By Your Name, who's a young British man, and then Daniel Day-Lewis, who will always get a Best Actor nomination.
Yeah, anytime he shows up, he gets a nomination.
Daniel Kalehu, K-A-L-Y-Y, K-A-L-U-U-Y-A, for Get Out. Kaluuya? Sure. Gary Oldman for The Darkest Hour and Denzel Washington for Roman J. Israel.
Everything I've read about this says that Oldman wins because he disappears into Winston Churchill.
I've heard that too.
Yeah.
I've heard good things about that.
But Kaluuya is incredible in Get
He's
Out,
incredible. So, he makes that whole movie. And Allison Williams is kind of.
She's really good.
She's so creepy. Towards the end, she goes full creepy, and you just you're scared of her. Amazing. Like I get more scared of her than I do like the parents who are like the creepy therapist and brain surgeon who are like towards the end of that movie. She is terrifying, legitimately terrifying,
super creepy. Yeah.
But yeah, no, Logan getting Best Adapted Screenplay for it. That movie's been playing on HBO over the last few weeks, and I mean, bits and pieces of it. You know, you land on HBO and you end up watching 25 minutes of it because it's just so good.
Of all the categories, I'm invested in Picture of the Year because I want to see Get Out win that.
Oh yeah, that'd be good.
I think Dunkirk is better. I would love to see Get Out just win it, just because it would be so out of the box
completely
for the Academy, right?
Yeah.
But I think the only award that I'm invested in is that Logan adapted screenplay. That thing, that movie hits me hard. And
yeah,
man, like you said, that was my favorite movie of 2017.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's solid arguments to be made that Logan and The Dark Knight are the two best superhero movies ever made.
Yeah.
I think.
So,
that argument stands up.
Cool.
Yeah.
So I had some ideas for topics for us today. I've been rewatching. I just finished rewatching Game of Thrones, and I was wondering if you guys, if is the Mad King really mad? Was he really bad? Because Aerys Targaryen, yes, because from.
The dude who wanted to kill everyone in King's Landing?
Is that
Wildfire?
Okay, hold on.
The answer is yes, Patrick.
Hold on.
I'm
going to give you two things, okay? History is written by the victors. So,
yeah.
And we're going off of Jaime Lannister's word.
Universally vilified Jaime Lannister.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
so why would he write the history that
And Aegon didn't rape and murder
not Aegon
the brother
Rhaegar
yeah he didn't rape and murder her he married her and had a kid. They were in love, like, and I'm like, ooh, Baratheon and Stark like came down the hill, and I don't know man.
Well,
like
before the rebellion even started,
I'm trying to understand what are you trying to.
I feel like you never see him in the show actually say it or do the thing that they're saying. It's like, kill everybody. You know, if everybody's trying to kill him, maybe he's just, single, you know, like panicking a little bit. But
yeah, so the sequence of events, as I remember it, is Rhaegar and Lyanna Stark abscond together. And everyone kind of assumes that he kidnaps her.
Right.
Because
there's no alternative narrative.
And that's
exactly
what's right.
But you're forgetting the fact that both Eddard's father, and Eddard's older brother go to King's Landing to plead with the king to get Rhaegar. Like, they demand Rhaegar account for his crime. And he burns them alive. Okay. That's actually the precipitating event of the rebellion.
Right.
That's what gets Ned involved in the rebellion.
That's the thread that goes throughout the whole series is when the Starks go to King's Landing, they get smoked.
Exactly.
So who went to King's Landing and got burned alive?
Eddard's father and Eddard's older brother.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
the heir to Winterfell.
Mad King is fucking mad, dude.
Okay. Here's the thing, looking at the entire show, like, all the Lannisters are dicks, right? And what if they're just lying the whole time? And the Kingslayer, you know, they're always trying to cause, like, problems between the Starks and the Targaryens, and maybe they saw how, you know, a piece of power, and the only reason Jaime stabbed the Mad King was because he ordered him to kill his father. But, like, Tywin Lannister was a dick, too. So I don't know.
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
But you bring up a very valid point in terms of the storytelling of Game of Thrones.
Right.
So much of what happened in the recent past that we don't see, that we only hear people talk about,
right,
informs the narrative that exists in the books.
Yeah, the genius of the story is all about two things: power and mythology.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And people who don't have complete information. Yep. Right?
Right.
And so, A, the pursuit of and use of power. And so the central focus of the entire series is all about that. And various people and how they use power, perceived or otherwise. And the other aspect, which is even more of a genius aspect of the series, is the idea of how stories get told and the lack of information and if people fill the gaps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody is asking those kind of questions in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
they're really just,
not. It's good and bad. Right.
The people in power, wielders of power, either generally have perfect information or enough that they're not questioned.
Mm-hmm.
But in Game of Thrones, it's phenomenal in that is one of the central points is that people are always operating without full information.
Yep.
And I just love that aspect of it. And I think that informs exactly what you're talking about, Patrick, which is tales are told. We don't truly know other than the word of people involved, and we question whether or not they are believable or should be believed, right? The untrustworthy narrator idea.
Well,
right?
How Martin structures the books. He tells by point of view characters, mm-hmm. so they only have the information. We only get the information really that the point of view character has, and we see things through their eyes. But we get to read the other chapters, so we know more than every other character in the book.
You know, far more, yeah.
Exactly. So we are getting the full picture of what's in the book, but the point of view character and why Martin chooses to tell his story that way and all these disparate parts that don't see what the other people are seeing and only have their own experience to draw on absolutely evokes that trope of, can we trust what we're reading? Can we even trust what the characters are seeing? Because we know everything else that's going on.
Well, their own agenda is getting in their way. Like Stark's wanting revenge, and Littlefinger wanting power, and Jaime Lannister. You know, he ordered to kill his father, so he had a choice to make. He's not going to kill his dad, you know. So,
yeah.
It's just sort of. I just had this idea of like, oh man, what if these guys aren't really bad? You know, they're like,
the first couple seasons, everybody's rooting for the Starks. Everybody kind of vilifies the Targaryens because of what Aerys Targaryen was and how Viserys treated Daenerys, and everybody kind of roots for Daenerys and how she's not like other Targaryens. But if you think about it, Daenerys is very much like other Targaryens. She has a different life experience in the sense that she was essentially sold into slavery, mm-hmm. and she's had to kind of live by her wits. But think about how she reacts to the adversity of Season 7. She is very much turns into a conqueror. Mm-hmm. She kind of tries it Tyrion's way, but her first inclination is to take her dragons and burn everything down.
Yeah,
she's like, submit, little, or I'm gonna burn you to down.
It's a little crazy, exactly.
Just like Aegon the Conqueror did during his conquest of Westeros, she is completely ready to burn everything to the ground for people who don't obey. She's not looking.
It's an interesting discussion, and it sucks that we have to wait until 2019 for new Game of Thrones. Have we heard anything about Winds of Winter ever?
Not a peep. As soon as the release date, believe me, I will be singing from the mountaintops when that book is getting dropped.
Seriously.
I can't even wait.
The internet will be on fire with that news.
That'll be headline news. Like,
totally.
People will close out their newscast with, like, this snippet of entertainment news. Winds of Winter will be published on this
day
or whatever.
So many people will buy that book. Holy crap.
It's
I was trying to find whether HBO was going to release any, like, information of whether a bunch of people canceled their HBO Go and Now accounts until 2019, but I couldn't find any information on that.
I don't think they would ever release that.
Yeah, exactly.
To be completely honest, I'm one of them.
Yeah.
HBO, because Game of Thrones isn't coming back this year, has kind of lost value for me, so.
Right. I mean, when you're paying for all these subscription services like Hulu and Netflix and Amazon and HBO, you know, you go where the content is, where you like the content, and when you start paying for them all, they all add up, and it's like, why don't I just buy cable? So, I just thought that was interesting. I also, I had a couple of notes.
Oh, speaking of release dates, I just wanted to, today, actually, Netflix announced season 2 of Jessica Jones is going to drop on March 9th.
Oh, cool.
So that's coming up, so that's cool.
Speaking of release dates, February 16th, a show I worked on for Netflix, Everything Sucks, is coming out, so everybody should watch that.
It's going to be a fun weekend.
February 16th.
February 16th, that's right.
We'll see Black Panther that weekend, and we'll watch the show.
Black Panther sold a lot of pre-sale. I saw that in there too. That they're excited about the numbers for
fastest pre-sale. I guess it outsold Civil War in terms of pre-sale tickets or something. So that's cool. I'm getting more and more hype for that movie.
I think that's going to be a real good one. So, I've also been rewatching Battlestar Galactica because it's on Amazon at the moment.
Worthy.
And first two seasons of Battlestar Galactica are amazing. They are so good. Up until they leave New Caprica, it's really good. Really good, science fiction.
They really pushed the whole New Caprica storyline with the occupation and kind of the insurgency of the humans on New Caprica. That's where they really started to push the boundaries in terms of, I mean, the humans become terrorists. I mean, they really do a suicide bombing. Violence to achieve political ends is kind of the most generic version of terrorism, and they fully embrace it in that movie. Or in that TV show, in that new Caprica, it's such a good show.
Like season 3 kind of loses its way. I didn't remember that the last time. It's just sort of wandering, and but I'm gonna finish it out because
isn't that
the
season where we get like Apollo is like fat Apollo for like five episodes or something? Yeah. Like, he puts on like 40 pounds.
Yeah,
and then he gets all. But then he like trims down and stuff.
He trims down and like he goes from like fat one episode to like. Like cut
super
again,
again. Like
super cut.
Before.
Yeah,
like it's fat suit Apollo.
Yeah,
like
fat suit Apollo. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
They added Fate of the Furious to HBO, and I watched that
the other day.
What did you think of that, Christopher?
Neither did I. I watched part of it. Those movies are also absurd.
I liked up until this one. Like I thought they were fun.
Oh, honestly, Paul Walker is Vin Diesel has become just kind of a caricature of himself.
Oh yeah.
And The Rock, you know, is hilarious as kind of this over the top, you know, ridiculously macho. You know,
they basically make them like superheroes in this freaking movie. Like the stuff that they're capable of doing and surviving is like so unbelievable that
You know what? I never saw the beginning of Fate of the Furious. How do they explain Paul Walker's character not being there?
They just don't. He's out. It's one. Yeah, it's one line of dialogue that he's out. He's with his family, and they're gone. Jordana Brewster's not in it either. She's just out. Like they're
okay, they don't explain it at all. It's just
It's one line of dialogue where they're just like
he's retired from the crew.
Yeah, he's retired from the crew, and that's it. It's fine. It's fine that they did that because they couldn't like kill off the character. I mean, that would be.
Yeah, I don't need a huge elaborate. I just was curious how they handled it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That actually seems totally appropriate to me.
Yeah, no, to remember those movies have gone from that first one, which is just about this crew of tuners.
Yeah, exactly. It's basically who are ripping off
semi trucks.
It's Point Break with Japanese cars.
It's so I can't stand the past two or three. Is it three movies now where there are super spies now with cars?
Yeah,
the heist movie that they did in Brazil.
Yeah.
That one was fun.
I like that one.
I like that.
Yeah,
the safe out of the building.
Yeah, it's
stupid ending.
It's stupid, but it's
the
great.
Heist building up to that, it was kind of a fun heist movie.
Oh yeah,
building up to that, I think.
Yeah. Well, and then that one, The Rock is like the antagonist, and it's so good. Like he was fun as the antagonist.
Yeah,
so
he was. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
I don't want to ruin the Fate of the Furious for anybody, but like you really shouldn't watch this movie. It's pretty bad.
You should watch it just because it's on TV now. And
yeah,
you should,
HBO.
It made a shit ton of money. It was like a top 10 movie.
They always make like $1 billion.
They do.
Like,
they always make a billion dollars.
There's an audience of just like you know, popcorn munching.
Yeah,
you know, chumps out there who just want to go see cars blow up and.
This is the first one that I didn't actively enjoy. Like there was so much eye rolling through this one that I couldn't enjoy it at all. Like the last like three have been absurd, but this one was just dumb. Even what's his name? The guy who plays he's in Game of Thrones, the redheaded guy, Kivu or whatever.
Yeah.
He couldn't even save it for me. He's
always fun at Game of
Thrones.
He was good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, no, it's got a huge problem because the moment you evoke nuclear weapon, there's nowhere else to go.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, they've gone from stealing money so they can tune up their imports to fighting off it's a James Bond movie with cars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
With exotic cars, it's idiotic.
Well, it used to be about racing.
In a good way. Like,
it used to be about
idiotic.
Yeah,
but they're like enjoyable in a okay. That's fast cars, and I like cool cars, and I like all of that. So, and some of the interactions are fun, and the crew is fun. But when you start tripping into
we're gonna fight a submarine.
You're fighting a submarine with cars? That's just stupid.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. The Rock is gonna shove a torpedo into something.
Well,
he's gonna reach out of his car door and shove a torpedo.
He does. He redirects it.
He redirects it because he's that strong. It's on the.
I mean, honestly, it might actually be believable that The Rock is that strong. Let's not kid about it.
So here's
it might be believable. He's
here's
like,
the thing, though.
Ass.
So
hey,
you guys,
why are we even talking about this? God
you
damn.
You guys have watched this movie? The lake that they're driving on, where they're supposed to be like going to the edge to like stop the submarine from leaving.
The bay.
How
the bay.
Long is that? How big is that bay?
It's the same stupid thing from
because
the,
it's like,
from the movie with the giant plane where like the,
right.
the runway is like 50 miles long.
Yeah, how long is that runway? Long. How long is this
so
lake?
Because they're presumably they're driving like 150 miles an hour, right?
Right.
Exactly.
And so if you're driving 150 miles an hour on this lake. And and the scene is 20 minutes long. Should someone do the math for me? Like, how big this
I mean,
place is?
That movie. Yeah, you're the movie expert, dude.
Yeah.
Do that movie math.
Well, if a car is driving 200 miles an hour, you're doing a football field a second.
Right.
I read an article in some kind of car magazine a few years ago, and that
And those cars driving 150 on ice, like... Yeah. No.
We've talked about this way too long.
Yes. Okay, good. Good.
The movie is terrible. I take back what I said. Do not watch it.
Do not watch
the movie. I mean, it's a waste of 2 hours.
You'll never get those 2 hours back.
I'm not part of this next part, but I know that you both finished Persepolis Rising. Is it Persepolis?
Yes.
Persephonis. What is
Persepolis.
It?
Persepolis.
Just like the... Yep. Just like the animated movie, Persepolis Rising.
Well, I mean, in true kind of James S. A. Corey style, they make a reference to kind of mythology in their title. Persepolis being a city, an ancient city that I'm gonna have to look this up, but I mean, it fits with the plot of the movie for sure in terms of a new kind of threat.
The
a
book.
New kind of ultimate power threat.
Yeah.
And I loved how the book ended. I thought it was...
You both are pretty happy with it?
Yeah, it sets up the next two or three books or how many there's going to be perfectly. It has a nice kind of... I would call the ending a little kind of ending slightly like Empire Strikes Back. In terms of we've got to figure out where we're going from here because... We're not in the most advantageous position, but we've had a small victory.
Right.
It's good.
It absolutely sets up the final two books.
Really there's only two left. They've confirmed that.
Yep.
Apparently the structure of the series is for 9 books, and this was book 7. So
they don't have a confirmed release date for season 3 of The Expanse, which is kind of disappointing. I was hoping for something this summer, but doesn't look promising.
They follow their normal kind of track. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would assume that it'd be March or April.
Right.
Yeah.
You'd hope that you'd heard something by now, though. So,
well, I mean, season 2 premiered in January last year, so we're in January, and we don't have any information, so it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah. Still working on it, maybe.
I mean, they're definitely making it. They cast one of my favorite female actors, Elizabeth Mitchell, who I think will play... Do you guys remember from the third book, the religious woman who goes on the excursion to the object. I think she's going to end up playing Anna. I think I would like to see her.
Oh,
play
yeah.
Anna. I think that'd be an interesting
cool.
part for her.
Cool.
From Lost, Elizabeth Mitchell. Oh, yeah.
She's a great actress, man.
Not Penny's Boat. Really good. Nice.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good one. Oh, I can't believe I didn't bring this up. So Denis Villeneuve, Blade Runner 2049 and Arrival director directing a Dune movie.
Oh yeah, dude, we reported that last year.
That's been talked about for a little while, and I saw that most recent report confirming that they're actively working.
They're doing it.
I think he's described it kind of as his dream project, hasn't he?
Well, the quote that he said is it's going to be Star Wars for adults, which I'm pretty happy with because that's what it should be.
Yeah,
so.
It will realign the universe in the correct state of things if it can be a transcendent film to replace that abomination that
David Lynch abomination.
David Lynch abomination.
It's my favorite book of all time, and if they're Villeneuve is genius, and so I have the source material is absolutely perfect for it. Should be the greatest series of movies ever. Should be absolutely be.
Do you think Dune should just be one movie, one book? I mean, it's long enough that it could be multiple films, but
it should be 3 hour. Each of them should be 3 hour movies.
Yeah, right.
So you think
Dune Messiah
and Children of Dune? You think he'll make that trilogy?
I'm hoping.
That would be amazing.
That would be amazing.
Technology exists to pull off God Emperor of Dune now too. So. He could absolutely pull that off too, given the current tech of CG.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As if if you don't know about God Emperor, I'm not going to tell you. You need to go and read all four books.
Jeez.
So that would complete kind of the cycle in your mind, because those four books kind of tell one story or four parts of enough of a story. Would that kind of make sense narratively to you?
There's a leap into the future after the fourth book.
Yeah.
And they go in a different direction. They're weirder. But those first four books are at peak science fiction. I mean, of all time. So they need to get made by Villeneuve. I will support that forever.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, he's the guy. He's the guy who needs to be in charge of the Dune remake for sure.
Speaking of peak science fiction, we can lament the passing of one of the best sci-fi fantasy writers ever.
Oh yeah,
Ursula K. Le Guin.
Yep.
Passed away.
Wizard of Earthsea is.
Yeah,
I read those as a kid, and just was enthralled by those books. Just loved them so much.
Well, and like we're talking about females, you know, involved in the industry, you know, and she's like a standout like female, you know, fantasy writer, and you know,
and
when it's most when it's mostly dudes, you know,
exactly,
you know, fantasy writers are famous
and tremendous stuff that's lasted
pioneer,
forever.
No question about it, pioneer. Yep.
So she passed away at the age of 88. So it's a good long life,
you know,
that has affected many.
Made the world a better place for sure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, mm-hmm. Completely agree.
That miniseries on what was it, Sci-Fi, like years ago?
Yeah,
I didn't think it was terrible. You know, it's not.
All right.
Yeah, you
she
know,
criticized that miniseries openly because they cast white actors.
Oh, really?
And she would describe her characters in her books as having darker complexions.
Oh man!
So she openly criticized.
Well, that's the times, you know. You know.
Oh no,
We're still trying to work through our American racism and sexism, you know. And this is the place we need to do it. Is with
you know, when those were made, they were still sort of hamstrung by the what's bankable, what will sell,
right?
What can we put on the screen? Kind of bullshit. Which I think. Mm-hmm. I think the pendulum has swung away.
It's starting to.
I hope so. At least.
Yeah. I hope so.
Yep.
Well, after Black Panther crushes it.
Seriously, when it makes $500 million.
Exactly.
And it's an amazing film.
It'll put all that
with a 95% black cast directed by an American.
Yeah, it's pretty
black
great.
Man.
Yeah.
Crush it.
Like I mean. Andy Serkis and Martin Freeman are the only like
white dudes.
As it should be.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a story about.
And they look like they're only in it for like a little bit. You know, it's like.
I've been reading more and more about the promotional machine is in full swing. So you'll see little snippets on the internet and little commercials. Describing, you know, Wakanda and Black Panther and his world and the Dora Milaje, his all female crew of bodyguards.
It's pretty awesome.
Brian Coogler has kind of taken the angle that they're kind of like the SEAL Team 6 of Wakanda.
Yeah.
And kind of crafted a whole fighting style that's unique to them. And how they fight as a unit. I can't even wait to see how they're brought to life on
screen.
It's
going to
be awesome.
Yeah, man. Pretty cool.
Can't even wait.
Pumped about that for sure.
Yep.
So I want to talk about one thing I watched last night actually on Netflix,
go for it.
Which if you guys haven't seen you really need to watch is the Godzilla anime.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Have you heard about this?
I've heard about it. I haven't.
World of Monsters or something? Is that the subtitle?
Holy shit, is that thing bonkers.
Really?
Awesome.
Is it good?
Oh, okay. Oh, my God. It is so anime, but it is so good. It is
right.
It is so entertaining. Holy crap.
It looks really cool.
Visually, it's incredible. The story is interesting. It's clearly the first of multiple movies.
Is it a movie or a show?
Good. It's really good.
Is it like a 2-hour feature? Or?
It's like an hour and a half.
Okay.
Oh, awesome.
All right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'll give that a shot.
Is it called Godzilla World of Monsters? Is that what it is?
Yeah. You really need to watch it. It is it's phenomenal.
All right, cool.
So weird and so crazy. But it's really good. Really good.
Okay.
I loved it. I loved
cool,
it.
Cool, man. Definitely. Godzilla, you know.
It's a Monster Planet is what it's called.
Oh, Godzilla Monster Planet?
Monster Planet.
All right. I'm down.
Yeah, the screenshots of this look crazy.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Watch it.
All right. Definitely going to watch that. That looks
awesome. That comes highly recommended by Christopher.
are they doing... They're going to do a Godzilla King Kong movie with this whole, like... I don't know what that universe is called, but the only thing I could call it, the Monarch, the group that's called Monarch that goes, they're in
the monster hunting
monster
organization.
Yeah,
no, I think that they're gonna continue to do movies in that universe.
They're trying to do
Gareth Edwards' Godzilla movie was great. King Kong. Mm-hmm.
I haven't heard if the next Godzilla movie will involve King Kong. I don't know if it's that soon. I think what they'll likely do is King Godzilla versus another one of his antagonists from the mythos.
What's the three-headed monster's name?
I forget.
But I mean, that's like, kind of his like ultra
Mothra
enemy.
Is the other one. Yeah,
yeah, Mothra. Yeah,
Godzilla King of Monsters comes out 2019, and they've already got a cast and. It's Michael.
What kind of bums me out about,
I don't know who that is.
What kind of bums me out about that is the. I mean, Kong Skull Island was so fun, but it was set in like 1974, mm-hmm. So they can't really keep this. They can't keep Tom Huddleston's character, and they can't keep Brie Larson's character because they'd be kind of.
Yeah,
you know, in their 60s.
Yeah, exactly. Their
movie drops. So.
That, I like those characters too, but they can't be in it.
Have you guys seen? I mean, I follow Brie Larson on social media. She's doing kind of some prep work for Captain Marvel.
I saw that picture of her in a flight suit.
Yeah, she's been
really.
She's been going up, like she's been training with Air Force because you know Carol Danvers. Her backstory is that she's an Air Force ace pilot / astronaut.
Cool.
I think.
Cool.
Yeah, so Brie Larson's doing the real kind of research for that. So I'm so excited for that movie.
Speaking of giant monsters, are you going to go see the new Pacific Rim, Andrew?
Absolutely.
Uprising, John Boyega thing? You going to go? You're into that?
I am totally into it.
It looks absurd. I think it's going to be
absurd.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the first Pacific Rim. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm asking.
Guillermo del Toro makes Pan's Labyrinth, and he makes the Shape of Water, and then he makes Hellboy, and he makes Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
And I love the first Pacific Rim. I think it's so fun.
I like John Boyega, and it looks kind of fun. You know, it's giant robots fighting monsters, kaiju.
And other giant robots.
Yes.
And other giant robots, yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's like a whole the
it
latest.
Looks like there's like a. It looks like there's an off. It's like there's a rogue organization.
Yeah.
of Jaegers.
Yeah.
The latest trailer hints that humans have
Jaeger
brought
ninjistics.
Yes.
Like, dude, I'm down. Let's go.
I'm totally down with Jaeger ninjistics.
Completely, dude.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it comes out in March. I'm pumped for it, man.
All right, good.
Yep.
Good.
And I love that what kind of the criticisms that were leveled against Pacific Rim, you know, the fights are always at night and it's in the pouring rain and they're going the exact opposite. And I don't mind those. I don't mind the fact that, you know, it was kind of the aesthetic that he built for the main fight in Hong Kong, how it was pouring rain and it was at night. But, I mean, every kaiju fight or every Jaeger fight you see in the trailer, it's in the daytime.
It's like daytime, yeah.
It's bright out. There's no rain. They're fighting in a brilliantly lit city.
Years ago, and Flash used to do this a lot too, and I think I even commented on it. It's like you set stuff at night, and it's a good way to like cover up bad CGI, you know?
Nothing in Pacific Rim is bad CGI.
It looks more like believable when it's dark, but, you know.
I mean, I didn't have any problems with the aesthetic choices that Del Toro made for the movie. I thought they were great, but
yeah.
Clearly they are doing the opposite in terms of we're going to set every fight during the day. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be underwater. It's going to be bright. Mm-hmm. We're just going to show off the robots. So hopefully they don't go in a direction of
and
it's just robot fighting and there's, you know,
and there's like
a
teenage girl driving one of the Jaegers. I don't understand that, but that's,
well, I mean, a whole new generation of Jaeger pilots.
Totally,
all of them were killed except for Masako and Raleigh. Who knows? Mm-hmm. And Charlie Hunnam's character doesn't seem to be there, so
yeah,
he's off trying to get the next King Arthur movie made or something.
Yeah. Did you really like that movie, Andrew?
It's not as bad as people made it out to be.
Right. It's got some interesting scenes, and I like the soundtrack. So
yeah, I do, too. And I like the fact that Guy Ritchie tried to do something different.
Yeah, he did.
He doesn't always succeed.
He swung for the fences, for sure.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, what movie was that?
King Arthur.
Oh, yeah, I just watched that. I really liked that.
Yeah, it's got scenes.
Not.
It's got scenes that are a lot of fun. Like the beginning with the giant elephant, and when it doesn't show Uther kill the guy.
I've always loved Richie's aesthetic.
Me too.
Yeah,
he's great.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And you really. He has kind of storytelling elements that he always refers back to. Kind of the first scene where Arthur and his two cronies are talking to the sergeant and recounting kind of the tale of what happened to them that day. I mean, that's just pure Guy Ritchie in terms of the fast cuts and the pacing of all of that. I mean, he does that in Snatch. He does that in all of his movies in terms of how they kind of cut you up to the story. So
can they not afford Robert Downey Jr. anymore for another Sherlock Holmes movie? Or did Game of Shadows not do as well as they'd hope? Probably not.
Probably. So. I think that series is kind of dead in the water.
Dead in the water.
Yeah,
it's fine. I like those first two. I thought they were great.
I thought they were fun too.
Mm-hmm.
Jude Law and Robert Downey Jr. had a nice chemistry as Holmes and Watson.
Speaking of monsters, Monster Hunter World comes out tomorrow night that I'm super pumped about video games. I'm really looking forward to that. I haven't played Destiny in weeks, and I'm looking forward to a new game. So,
yeah,
I'll be getting that around.
I've been watching videos on that. That game looks great, man.
Yeah, it's like third person run around, like fighting giant monsters.
Farming shit from your monsters you kill and crafting new gear and all of that.
Right, right.
I mean, you can play in squads of four, right?
Yep. Totally.
Do you have a crew that's going to buy that game, Patrick? And
Zach is the only friend of mine that's confirmed that he's purchased it. So
Chris,
I only
do you think you're going to buy it?
I am strongly considering it. Yeah,
he's on the fence.
If both of you buy it, I'll buy a copy.
I've already purchased it. So yeah, Chris just needs to pull the trigger. Yeah,
if we play some Brothers Geek Monster Slayage, I think that'd be fun. The
four of us hunting down giant dragons. Come on!
I think it's absolutely perfectly set up for streaming of the Brothers Geek.
Oh yeah, so, tomorrow I'm definitely going to be.
It comes
streaming.
Out tomorrow night.
It drops on January 26th, but on Xbox Live it drops the 25th at 9 Eastern Standard Time. So I think that's 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock our time. So,
oh shit!
Yes, right. Yes.
Right. Chris, are you coming to Phoenix tomorrow?
No, I'm driving up Friday night.
All right. Okay. Any other topics you guys want to talk about? You guys got anything else?
Chris and I were just at Disneyland. We had a kind of big.
The
Arizona Schmaltzes went to Disney for a couple of birthdays.
Yes, yes. Happy birthday, Caitlin. Happy birthday, Kristen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We had a great time, I think. So lots of kind of Disney excitement going on. We, I actually had a, I stayed on Monday and I bummed around the parks a lot with Daniel and Joey, and Joey is super pumped for Infinity War. So we were talking Marvel movies basically all day. Daniel, you know, them getting caught up and, you know, which, you know, thinking of, you know, trying to figure out where the Infinity Stones were and theorizing about all that. So those discussions were going on all day.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, Joey's all into it. So that was a lot of fun. And Daniel was thinking about all the movies that he hadn't seen yet. So have you guys seen this on the internet, though? Like, I mean, Infinity War comes out in May 5th or 6th or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you start now, you can basically watch one Marvel movie a week until the movie comes out.
Oh my gosh, I might just do that. Go back.
There's like 15 or 16 weeks until that movie drops, and there's like 16 or 17
Marvel like,
movies.
I remember there was a year where there wasn't that many movies out, and they had a marathon, and it wasn't that long. But like a couple years ago, they did a 24-hour marathon. You remember that?
Yeah.
Where you were in a theater watching 24 hours of Marvel movies leading to, I think it was the second Avengers movie.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. There's so many of them now.
There is so many of them. And
it's great.
Yeah, but that's if you want to get yourself fully caught up and live in, because Infinity War, you know, is going to conceivably unite like all the stories that have been told up until now.
I read an article the other day about it. I would plug the source, but I don't remember. But every single Marvel hero that's been in the movies will be in it. Every single one. Like everybody's got a spot. There, nobody will be left out. There's like 49 heroes or something absurd.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Isn't that great? Well,
hopefully it doesn't, you know, groan under the, you know, weight of all of that and just become a mess.
You got to kind of focus on like Iron Man, Captain America, you know, those guys.
They're not going to give Cumberbatch, you know, a lot of things.
He's going to be in a couple of scenes. He's going to be in the final battle. Like,
they can't possibly kind of expect that. Even, you know, Chadwick Boseman's T'Challa will have a ton to do, or even Mark Ruffalo's Hulk will have a ton to do.
Well, it seems like one of the big battles takes place in Wakanda. It looks like a jungle place. I'm assuming it's Wakanda.
One of the theories is one of the Infinity Stones is in Wakanda.
That makes sense. It makes sense. In the comics, like Vibranium is got cosmic powers coming off of it. So maybe they're just in the MCU, they're just kind of...
Well, that's part of what I was talking with Joey and Daniel about, because when we were talking about Black Panther, and when I was kind of giving them the kind of the basics on what Wakanda was all about, Wakanda's whole economy and the fact that their technology is so much more advanced is because they have an enormous amount of vibranium, which is the most adaptable metal in the world. So it can be used to make all kinds of amazing things, not just Captain America's shield.
Right.
So the reason that it's kind of this utopia.
It's a very limited metal, except for this one country has tons of it. Right.
Tons of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really interesting that, I mean, in the comics, it's more like vibranium or adamantium is kind of but the MCU universe hasn't owned X-Men, but now that Disney bought Sony, I've been reading articles. 20th Century Fox. I've been reading articles about people being worried Deadpool 2 won't be rated R, but they've already said that it's going to be rated R. So that's good.
Deadpool 2 is in the can. So
The future, I guess, of Deadpool. Then
the question will be: in 2025, are we going to see Avengers versus X-Men?
Oh.
Is that the movie we're going to see?
Well, and I foresee a lot of Marvel heroes dying. I think Iron Man's going to die. Probably Captain America. You know, and Thor, his contract's up. Like, he's made all the Chris Hemsworth, his contract is done. Like, he's not. They haven't re-signed him for more movies, so he could be dead too. So
they're not going to kill him off.
No.
No,
they'll keep them around, but not necessarily like
they'll just replace them with actors.
Yeah.
I think I want them to tell more stories because I want Captain Marvel to be a great movie, and I want Brie Larson to kind of
I want her to be like Chris Evans was in Phase 2. Like, the Captain America movies were kind of the spine of Phase 2 with Winter Soldier and Civil War.
Oh, yeah. Having,
you know, Captain Marvel kind of carry Phase 4.
They affected the universe so much more than the...
any of the other ones.
Right, yeah. Right.
So I would love to see that. I'd love to see Captain Marvel be the centerpiece.
Well, and Marvel's going more cosmic. You know, Guardians of the Galaxy was a big risk. And then
it paid off.
And it paid off. So Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 being more cosmic, and then rewatching Thor Ragnarok, that's takes place on all other planets. It never goes to Earth, you know. It's interesting. So
it'll be great to see. Hopefully they can keep the momentum and just keep making fun movies with all these characters.
That's awesome that Joey's watching all these and he's interested and he's into it. That's great.
Yep.
Cool. Andrew.
Yes, sir.
Do you have some trivia for us today?
I do have some trivia.
Before we get to trivia, I just want to also call out that Monstrous Volume 13 is out. We're coming out this week.
The issue 13?
Issue 13.
Copy. Yes. Cool. Oh, nice.
And so if you haven't read issues 1 through 12, you need to do that immediately. Mm. And then purchase 13 because it's an incredible series. And Andrew, I want Volume 2 back.
Yep, I'll have it for you this weekend.
This weekend.
Nice.
Yep. Persepolis Rising is done. I will finish Volume 2 for sure.
Cool.
Mm. All right.
Andrew, trivia.
It's pretty simple trivia tonight. You know, it's because it's Academy Awards season. I'll just straight out ask you guys. What film received the most nominations ever?
Ooh, I think I remember
most nominations ever.
Most nominations for a single film.
I think it was my best guess is, Mad Max Fury Road was 16. I think that was a few years ago. I remember that being a big deal. But I also kind of feel like Titanic had a bunch. Titanic years ago.
Return of the King
is a good choice. Okay,
that's my guess.
I'm gonna go with Fury Road. Yeah.
All right. Most nominations received by a single film: 14.
Ooh.
All About Eve in 1950.
All About Eve. 1950.
Patrick was right on though in terms of Titanic. Titanic was nominated in 14 categories.
Oh wow!
14 out of 17 available Academy Awards categories.
Jeez.
And how many? What about Return of the King? How many?
Return of the King was nominated for 11.
Oh wow! So it's pretty high up there.
In 17 categories, was nominated for 11, and I think it missed out on because it didn't get it. I'm trying to remember. Ian McKellen got nominated for Best Supporting Actor, I think, for Fellowship of the Ring, but the Lord of the Rings movies never got any acting nods. They got all the technical nods and directing, and I mean, each movie was nominated for Best Picture, but they missed out because they didn't get acting nominations. But yeah, no, and La La Land had 14 nominations.
14, wow.
Believe that, and it won 6. But Titanic was nominated in 14 categories, and it won 11.
I mean, yeah, I want the Academy Awards to like mean more, and I feel like they have, but they're always just so political.
It's just a dumb.
Yeah,
it is.
Fest.
It is a Yank
pretty
fest.
Much.
You're absolutely
much.
Right. This surprised me though. In Ben-Hur, there was 15 categories available. Ben-Hur was nominated. It was nominated for 12. Have you guys seen Ben-Hur recently?
That movie's good.
It is a good movie.
It is.
And it's kind of a genre film too, if you really think about it. It's got some religious aspects, but it's also got that epic kind of historical adventure stuff going on. So
totally.
Yep.
Awesome. If you would like to help Andrew with his trivia, you should email him kingofthenorth52@gmail.com or email us on brothersgeekpodcast@gmail.com, and then you know, follow us on Twitter, brothers_geek. At twitter.com and then brothersgeek.com for all your show needs, you know.
Right on.
Thanks, guys.
Be curious, peeps.
Yeah.